For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Wow. Fellow adventurers. Once again with Sir Croakington. Now, for the last month or so, Sir Croakington has been hyping herself up so that she can do this big adventure that's coming called the Chamber of Horrors, which is in the Sounding Oak in Tallinnus. The Sounding Oak is an ancient circular tree that is revered by the people of Tysa. Towers over a circular stonewall garland on the oldest section of Tallinnus. Over the past few centuries, the grand tree has lost several limbs, which has caused it to assume a withered, almost eerie appearance. Despite this, the Sounding Oak and the garden in which it stands remains a place where people frequently congregate, so you can step up to the Sounding Oak. You move up and stand before the ancient oak, a small group of people several yards away. Way near the garden's eastern wall, listen intently to an old, white-haired man expounding about the problems faced by the farmers of northern Tysa. After nearly a minute, you tire the man's harsh, droney rhetoric and step away from the tree. Step up again. You move up and stand before the ancient oak. A small group of people, several yards away, near the eastern wall, listen to an old white-haired man spouting about the crime that plagues both Trithic and Lugspur. Yep, a lot of crime there. Yep, we fought a lot of it. After nearly a minute, you tire of the man's harsh, droney rhetoric and step away from the tree. Step up to the Sounding Oak. It's another guy spouting about the deplorable state of Tysa's neglected name fleet. I don't know whether he's on about anything here. But admittedly, I think people complain about armies being underfunded no matter how much you fund it. So, who knows? It seems pretty chunky from what I've seen. But we don't know how chunky everyone else's is. And also, there's no big wars that seem on the horizon. And Ichthyon doesn't exactly use boats. I mean, probably could, but when you can just gate things into anywhere at any time, you don't need a boat. Of course, there's pirates. There's always pirates. But that seems to be mostly in hand. We haven't really done that much high seas adventures, so exactly how things are holding up there, can't really say. Anyway, after nearly a minute, you tire of the man's harsh, droney rhetoric and step away from the tree. Step up again. Moan about the navy. Near the eastern wall, you listen to an old white-haired man expounding about the danger represented by Tysa's thanes. I mean, there was a danger? I mean, I think Thane Mazamak, who's not evil per se, would definitely would utterly screw over Tysa to save his own homeland, no doubt about that. And you know, that's not even really bad, but It's just he's got dual loyalties in the classic sense. And we're not even sure how much of the first loyalty he has. I mean, some he's definitely helped out. He fought one of those goblin wars, but we don't know whether that's because he actually cares about Isa, or he's just building himself up for his own agenda. Well, then stuff happens, so that's no longer an issue. And that's all I'm going to say about that. You want to know what things I'm vaguely referring to? Well, you're going to have to play through Proving Ground 6. It's a big thing. Okay, all right, one more. That's the Crime and Truth of Kilmerg Spore. Goblins face both Harvest and Orkantisa. Of the WAP epidemic plaguing the city. Oh, yeah, well, we did help with that a bit. We dealt with old Three-Tail. A white-haired man expounding about the four-tailed return of Wilton. Yep, that's happening. He's come back. He absolutely wept Silver Wisp. And he keeps up flying about. He's a dick. Absolute whack. And at some point, I'm going to have to kill him properly. In a way that actually matters. Okay. That's enough of that. There might be more things you can hear if you keep stepping up to the Astounding Oak. But that's not the main purpose of this adventure. This episode? No. It's adventures of this location. The Chamber of Horrors. Emmett Haler tells you when she last saw him, as she shielded three of her companions from the wizard's parting volley of magic, was his limp body being dragged out of the tavern by two of the dark, barbed assailants. Let us begin. Imbuck. You scarcely recognise Emmett Haler when she first arrived in the circular stone-walled garden. A simple sanctuary long ago built to surround the legendary Sounding Oak. Dishevelled and nervous might best describe your initial impression of your trusted friend and staunch ally and genuine badass. So things must be really bad. Even now, though she's been standing before you for the last several moments, her movements seem unsteady and her thoughts seem distant. As if almost entirely removed from the present, it's easy to see that something profound has affected her. Despite her silent effort to shake free of it, she's not yet escaped its grasp. "It's been a long month," she says, blowing back a dangling strand of hair as she takes a seat on the low wall surrounding the base of the tree. "I don't suppose you've been to Mergspool? The Twisted Gate? It's no more. We've scattered to the far corners of the kingdom and beyond. We have our places for now. We'll be safe. But you, Sir Crokington, you and I both, we cannot be afforded such a luxury. I'm afraid we're in quite the thick of everything. Out in the open, as they close in around us." Briefly ask her about the Twisted Gate. Emmett Haler seems oddly reluctant to provide exacting details about what prompted the abandonment of the Twisted Gate, a place that long served as a safe haven for her and fellow members of her ancient forgotten faith. She simply says the Elm House was compromised. They can no longer be used. "With the exception of one of us, we're all safe now," she says. "Even the two of us meeting here in the open is dangerous. We can be thankful that the incident at Twisted Gate wasn't any worse than it was." Emmett Haler turns and watches a handful of youths moving through the gate at the far end of the garden. They stand speaking amongst themselves for nearly a minute for dispersing back along the lane that brought them here. When they are gone, and the guard is once again deserted, she looks back at you and smiles. Would you love to have their cares? I mean, trade theirs for your own? Even for just a day, she says. Some said. It's been a long month. No shorter for you, I'm sure. But even with events as they are, I've not been idle. I do hope some things were bought. Let me start with Quillborg. Quillborg. Now that's the... Well, I'll just read the lawbook entry again. Quillborg. Nestled between the southern edge of the great Serwyn Forest and the perilous mire known as Belsong Slough, the town of Quillborg is described by many who chance to visit it as a strange and unwelcome sort of place, filled with an odd assortment of unfriendly characters. As the tales of travellers are subject to the whims of those who tell and retell them, it's like the inhabitants of Quillborg, like the inhabitants of any other remote settlement on the edge of the wild, necessarily wary and suspicious of outsiders. Emmett Heyer tells you that after parting with you in Highmeadow, she immediately dispatched a trusted agent to Quillborg, seeking to discover anything about the scavenger and his possible recent movements in the region. While she's not yet received word from this agent, she says she's arranged to meet with him in 2 weeks' time at the Silver Shaft and in on the road between Twythick and Mertzball. I'm afraid the continuation of our dangerous little enterprise awaits what we'll hopefully learn from the man I've sent south, she says. He's very good at what he does, so we needn't concern ourselves there. He's not quite a scavenger. He's got a reputation all his own. He'll find out what we need to know. Emmett Ferrier stands up, and Hank glances around the small garden. Apart from the two of you, only a handful of people in the vicinity of the tree. Apparently satisfied by what she observes, she's just observed, she sits back down. So anything you need to tell me? She asks, speaking in a more relaxed tone. One that suggests some unspoken fear yet to be realised. You look like you're keeping yourself well. You provide her with a few pertinent details of your more recent endeavours. She listens intently and then, apparently having satisfied what she seemed to have felt was a necessary inquiry, she abruptly switches topics. Her lowered voice and unflinching gaze portraying the seriousness of what she's about to relate. There are some things I need to tell you. You listen with growing interest as Emily Taylor reveals several interesting details about the incident that forced her and her companions to abandon the Twisted Gate. There was an ancient in our midst for quite some time, she says. What took him so long to act is difficult to say. But when he did, it nearly proved the ruin of us all. She tells you, following your meeting in Highmeadow, she returned to Mixport, where she dispatched to Quillborg the man she previously mentioned. Then, the very next evening, she and her brethren were set upon as they slept by a group of powerful spellcasters. What I can tell, they are trying to incapacitate us, she says. They wanted us alive, though I shudder to guess at their motive. I dare say they found us a little more capable of defending ourselves than they anticipated. We all left a bit singed and dazed when they finally fled into the night. It wasn't till a few minutes later that I realised my brother, Thrymback, was missing. Now, okay, Thrymback. Now, he's another great rising hero of the age and incredibly tough and badass. Right, let's just read it all more entry. Thrymback, considered by many to be the most famous and accomplished adventurer of the current age. The mighty and self-righteous Thrymback boasts a long and illustrious list of deeds. While it hasn't been substantiated, there's long been a rumour floating about Rumbach was considered for thaneship by King Renwald upon the death of Thane Trasach, was passed over in favour of the man now known to all as Thane Borin. Of late, Thrymbach has become a somewhat common feature at the Goblin Glory, and we met him there. And for some reason, he was obsessed with the Dreadstones, which wasn't a good thing for him, and wasn't really a good thing for us either, because they're just one of those cursed artifacts where you want them, but they don't actually do anything for you. It's just that everyone wants them, and everyone goes a bit stabby to get them. And he had them for a long, long time, and, well, they broke him. Yep. Thrymbach is missing. And now, after all this stuff, he's got kidnapped by evil mages. He just doesn't get a break, does he? The young woman's sudden mention of Thrymbach takes you by surprise. When you last spoke with Aemon Hare about her brother, she'd indicated he was indisposed somewhere in Trevik, and she'd not wished to converse further on the subject. You clearly recall your last conversation we've had with Aemon Hare about her brother Thrymbach. Aemon Hare gazes at you thoughtfully for several moments, and seems about to speak. When you unexpectedly ask about her brother Thrymbach, she shrugs and shakes her head. For a change in demeanour, it's easy to see the inquiries touched a sore subject. Lost to this world, oh, so I see fit to say, she says, with her voice subtly choked with emotion. Within goes the only true light I've ever known in this world. You're always protecting me, Sir Crokington, though I found strength enough to get along on my own. I know that you brought in the stones, and I might have cursed your name for it at once, no more. Don't think, even for a moment, I bear any resentment towards you. How could you have known? My brother's undoing was his own work. If he hadn't found you to bring stones, he would acquire the services of another to do the same. You ask Emmett Hale if Thrymbach is still alive. She wipes away a streaking tear, and again shrugs. He was, though barely so, when I last saw him. 9 6 months ago, she says. He was in Twithic, the state in which I discovered it is not one I would ever describe to anyone. If it's agreeable to you, Sir Crokington, I very much like to speak no more of him. Your thoughts abruptly return to the present. Emmett Hare tells you, she had all but consigned her brother to slow, gruesome death that almost certainly awaited him on the streets of Addison. Don't think myself heartless. Through my outward indifference to his plight, would have me seen as such by some, she says. I can no longer hope to help him. My pleading and my quiet patience had their limits. They solved nothing. I told myself he'd already died, and I left him to whatever fate would ultimately befell him. The one thing I remained thankful for all of this was that my father and mother had both already gone to their rest. For them to receive him as he would have been, as he was, would have been more than they could have hoped to bear. Emmett Hare pauses. Despite the personal and tragic nature of what he's just related to you, a steadfast demeanour betrays no hint of emotion. Then, she continues, he turned up on the doorstep of Mixable at the Twisted Gate. According to Emmett Hare, the man who came to the Twisted Gate late one summer evening was far removed from the hateful dying wretch she'd seen abandoned in Twithic some months earlier. Yulun and Thumbach, who seem to have at last bested the worst of his demons, were swiftly invited back into the fold for which he was unceremoniously cast years earlier. He was briefly. He was very different, but only in the best possible way, she says. He was, as I'd always chosen him to remember him, capable and coherent, eager to help us in any way he could. We opened it, I most of all. I was again proud to call him my brother, proud to watch a wound fall silent when he entered it, for people to hang on his every word. You ask her about the spellcasters involved in the raid on the Twisted Gate, and if he knows for certain they took Grimbaum, she nods. I have no proof, but I'm prepared to swear that with the Lunui, she says, the name immediately bringing to mind the many sinister tales surrounding the infamous order. And yes, they have him. At first, I thought they'd come only for him. My brother certainly has a long list of his own enemies. But they attempted to capture us all. Threw himself at them with a fury I've never known to exist in him. It was that frightful, savage rage that put the mages on their heels and gave the rest of us time enough to escape. It was unfortunately that same rage that played him into their hands. You know what? Probably doesn't mind that at all. After all, he is a hero of the age. And if sometimes there's a price to pay. But sometimes that price is steep. And sometimes you end up paying it yourself. That's just part of the thing. Part of the game. It sucks, but it's part. But you can't. You just gotta roll with it. Keep going until they finally stop you. And make sure you make as much. You bring down as many of the bastards with you as you can along the way. All right. Anyway, let's read about the Lunarek. For many consider the Lunarek a brotherhood of mages versed in all manner of telepathy and psionics, to be little more than a myth, though those who contend they are indeed real, and the danger to anyone who wittingly or unwittingly crosses path with them. Some who believe the Lunarek exist also believe the operators in the enforcement and interrogation sect of the Grey Circle. Others believe they ply their sinister craft in the employ of a greater, more mysterious master. Okay, so Runeskin then. Although, honestly, them being involved in this could go with either. Or maybe they're a bit loose with their allegiances in general. Because, I mean, they're good at psychic torture, so they're not just gonna do that for forever. Very mercenary of them, perhaps. Yes, I mean, if they're more closely ties to the Grey Circle, Venorus will have connections somehow to get them involved, possibly having to forge some signatures along the way. And if they work for Runeskin directly, then, well, Runeskin should just say, yeah, get this guy. He's really annoying. Also, Sir Croakington will turn up. Break his mind, then give him to me so I can, rebuild him. Make him stronger, faster, tougher, eviler, or something like that. Emma Taylor tells you that she last she saw the brother, she shielded three of her companions from the wizard's parting volley of magic, was his limp body being dragged out of the tavern by two of the dark garbed assailants. Emmett Haler says she believes that her brother Thrimback is being held and interrogated by the Lunarek, a sinister order of mages long believed to have an unofficial association with the Grey Circle. In some ways, it makes little sense, she says. And of all of us, Thrimback knows the least about our recent doings, for perhaps what he could reveal would be enough to prove dangerous to us. Yes. I mean, if you're going for information, you wouldn't get Grimblad. I mean, he's really tough to get, and he doesn't know much. I mean, maybe they think he knows more than he does know. Could just be a honest, you know, a lack of intel. They didn't learn about him being cast out of the Order and his months of being a absolute wretch. I mean, if they just assumed he was this cool, badass guy for the whole time, they'd think, oh, yeah, he definitely knows this. He would be right in the middle of it. If they didn't know about that, that would be a sensible thing to conclude. And so they got him. But then they found out, oh, he doesn't know as much as he did. But, I mean, if they do know about the whole him being a wreck for a couple of years, but he still has value as a hostage or a lure bait. Because if we've got him, then Emmett Haler is obviously going to go to pretty much any lengths to get him back. And now she's definitely valuable. And also, I would prob Sir Croakington. Me will get roped into it. He has his own enemies, of course, but I cannot believe that he can count the Grey Circle among them. Certainly not the Lunarwell. Doesn't matter to me why they want him. Want my brother back, Sir Croakington. The images still haunt me. The day I left him rolling about, sobbing, gasping, rotting in some alley in Twithic. We'll never be rid of them, will we?
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
I will not abandon him again. I'm going to go after him. Emmett Haley reveals she knows the location to which Thrimback was taken. She tells you that north of Mixpool, in the wilderness that once the southeastern shore of Lake Ironwine, Ironwine, stands the ruins of an ancient Titian outpost known as Deep Forest Hole. The long abandoned structure, she tells you, is a place which she believes is used by the Lunarek to imprison and interrogate their enemies. My suspicions have been confirmed by two of our confederates, she says. They've kept watch over the wounds of Deep Forest for most of the week. The Lunarek are most definitely coming and going. There's been no sign of my brother. If he's there, he's been in there for almost a month. There's every chance he's already dead. I'm still going after him. Emmett Haler pauses and glances around the walled garden before continuing. I want you to prepare to meet me at the Silver Shaft in 2 weeks, she says, her tone firm as she issues a bold and unexpected directive. I've told you all of this because I do not dare to underestimate the danger into which I'm heading. If I do not arrive at the inn, one of my associates, someone you can trust without reservation, will be there in my place. Rescuing my brother is my business, Sir Croakington. What lies before you cannot be delayed or endangered by any extraneous efforts, simply cannot. This business is and will be my own. You know I'm not going to take that. Despite a seemingly hardened position, you immediately tell Emmett Haler you have no intention of allowing her to embark on such a perilous undertaking alone. You boldly inform Emmett Haler that you will not allow her to undertake alone what will likely prove to be an extremely perilous endeavour. When you tell her that you will accompany her on the mission to find and rescue her brother, she steadfastly refuses your order, your offer. No more about it, she says. I will not have all that I've worked for cast down for what could be a lost cause. My reasons for going to Deep Forest on my own. They have a certain debt to my brother. Please, take no offence, but don't interfere with this. There's too much at stake. Ignoring what she's just said, you reaffirm your position, telling her you will accompany her on her mission to find her brother. Emily Thayer's defiant demeanour softens, and she audibly sighs. The young woman, originally put off by your unyielding persistence, relents, shaking her head as she carefully studies your face. I didn't think I'd stop you. But you have to admit I did an admirable job trying, she says. What is it about you, Sir Croakington? Please don't take this as anything but a compliment. It's meant to be. You remind me so much of my brother. I see his spirit in you, but even more abundance. Such a thing is even possible. Sorry, I didn't mean to ramble, but thank you. Emmett Haler's face goes flush and she looks away, her eyes again scouring the edges of the garden. You sense she has just revealed to you more than she intended, and that a sudden realization of slip has brought upon her a small measure of anxiety. Well then, I'm sure that you... She abruptly abandons her abandoned train of thought when you nod, and with a single utterance, reaffirm your desire to accompany her to the ruins of Deep Forest. Right then, we'll leave it at that. We'll also leave at dawn tomorrow for Mensmore. There's still enough of the day left to gather up the supplies we might need. I'm going to Gaitus with the port. If I'm going to Gaitus with the port, I'm going to need to quickly acquire a few different things. The following morning found you standing on the top of a low, forested hill, just to the west of Tannis. You've been there for nearly an hour, having left the city just before dawn. For the last several minutes, you've been watching as Emmett Haler makes sure she says the final adjustments to a familiar arrangement of 7 rounded stones. At last, apparently satisfied with the results of her toil, she steps back and removes a bulging pouch from her rope belt. She empties the bag into the centre of the ring of stones, spinning out a large pile of white and grey sand. You recall having seen this curious ritual performed twice away, once by Emmett Haler and again by the bandit chief Redleg. All right, you first, she says, waving a hand over the creation. Stepping onto the sand will open the portal. I'll be right behind you. If all goes well, we'll appear in a little spot in the forest near Moonsport. It's a place I use quite a bit for this sort of thing. Though still slightly trepidatious about this strange form of gazing, you acknowledge your companion with a single nod and step bravely towards the stone ring. Suddenly, the instant before you lower your foot into the pile of sand, In the centre of the wing of Stoke, you catch sight of a shadowy finger lurking in amongst the trees just ahead. In that single fleeting moment, before the shape vanishes, melting into the last departing remnants of dawn's twilight, you're certain you've seen and recognised a face, the face of Coro Tell. The crunch of sand beneath your right foot serves to banish all force of the strange sighting from your mind. The ground quivers, and a dazzling white light erupts from the earth and streaks into the pale sky. The sounds of the worlds around you swiftly fade, first to a chorus of rhythmic whispers, and then just as quickly to silence as you tumble headlong through a cold, lightless void. Your eyes fly open, and you immediately feel a pair of hands gripping you by the shoulder, gripping you on the back. Turning around, you find yourself face to face with Emily Hayer, somewhere in the thick of the forest. The young woman withdraws her hand and steps back, for she continues to study you closely. "There, not so bad after all," she says. "Looks as if you were going to topple over." "We're not precisely where I hoped we'd be, but we're close enough. Come on, we need to get something. Then we've some place to go. We're right outside Moosepool." You follow Emily Halia through the forest. I'm surprised when she suddenly stoops at the base of a towering maple and retrieves a small leather satchel. She quickly opens the bag and peers inside. Apparently content, she closes the satchel and fixes it to her rope belt. "Just a little more of what I used to make those portals," she says. "I leave them around, so I don't have to carry them everywhere, all right? Hold your nose, we're heading into the city." Within only a few minutes, two of you emerge from the forest and step into the broad road that leads up to the gates of the city. Under the watchful eye of several city guardsmen, you pass through the imposing timber barrier and step onto the streets of the unsavoury withered wood. As you and Emmett Hayner make your way through the streets of Mugsville, you quickly come to realise that the young woman's meandering path is taking you ever closer to the twisted gate. Your suspicions are confirmed when the two of you stop at the edge of the small market directly opposite the tavern. We inquire about her reasons for returning here, and she quickly tells you she hopes to be able to retrieve something from the tavern cellar. She says she now realizes the endeavour would prove far too risky. "Looks empty, but it's not," she says, suddenly stepping back from the edge of the street. "They've left at least one behind, perhaps to search the place, or wait for me. I only hope that coming here wasn't a mistake. Let's go." Without delay, the two of you make your way out of the city and head north along a well-travelled road that eventually bends west. Not long after turning west, you leave the road and plunge into the forest, returning to your original northward course. "There's a smaller road not far ahead that'll take us close to Deep Forest," she says. "Stay ready, Sir Crokington. I didn't tell you you'd walk into a very dangerous situation. The Lunar Wreck aren't the sort of foe to whom we want to have any advantage, no matter how slight." Suddenly, after stepping over a trickling brook, Emmett Hayer turns and stares at you thoughtfully. "Thank you," she says. "I couldn't bring myself to ask for your help, and yet, without it, I would certainly be in for far more than I might hope to handle. Thank you." The world Emmett Hayer mentioned suddenly appears ahead, sooner than you expected. The two of you pause at the end of the winding, well-worn track and cautiously survey the immediate area. "We're not far from the hole," she says. "Let's skirt the road. Say just inside the edge of the woods." With Emmett Hayer leading the way, nimbly through the undergrowth, she follows the curving road. The two of you set off on the final push towards Deep Forest Hold. You've covered less than 50 yards when your companion holds up her white hand and mutters something that sounds like a curse. She points to a spot just up ahead, the edge of the road. The measure proves unnecessary. It's a grim sight you've already taken notice of. In the middle of the road, 20 yards from where you and Emmett Hay are quenched in the undergrowth, are crouched in the underbrush, admittedly a lot easier for Sir Croakington, lies an overturned wagon. Next to the sturdy wagon lie the mangled, bloodied remains of two horses and three men. The wagon's cargo, dozens of wooden planks, lie scattered across the track. For it's difficult to tell for certain at this distance. It appears that both the men and horses were brutally slain by the blows of blunt weapons. Emmett Hayler's face betrays no emotion as her eyes scour the scene. Something is there, she whispers. See it right there, just behind the wagon. Suddenly, you spot that to which you're referring. Before you can say anything, a lonely figure silently emerges from behind the overturned wagon. Your heart pounds. A lone Otua steps into view from behind the wagon, the wooden iron being, moving more swiftly and fluidly than you recall. Moves up to the bodies of the slain men and stops. Then, in a move that leaves you stunned, the Otoruk turns its faceless head towards you. You've been spotted. Emmett Hayler wastes no time. He draws a curved wooden wad and steps out of the road, levelling her weapon at the Otoruk. Before the sinister automaton has taken a single step in her direction, a blast of fire erupts from the tip of her wad and strikes the Otoruk, instantly incinerating the construct. Oh, she also has a wand of dragonfire equivalent. As the smoke lifts, three more Otoruk step out from behind the wagon and start towards you. Emmett Hayler immediately shouts at you, warning you to stay back as she hurriedly attempts to unleash a second attack with a spluttering wand. Now, it won't work. It takes a couple of hours to recharge. But her warning goes unheeded. Before she can ready her wad for another blast, you're already upon the Otoruk, brazenly engaging the deadly trio. Okay, time to equip Umdrol's oaken wad to fight these. And I'm just, these Otoruk, they're going to fight the same as all the other Otoruk in the many, 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 many adventures where you end up fighting them. So I'm just going to be quick combating them. Here's the first. It is slain. 17 XP. You step over the heap of twisted iron and splintered wood at your feet and prepare to engage the next of the Otoruk. Otoruk 2 or 3. Quick combat. 17 XP. You step over the heap of twisted iron and splintered wood at your feet and prepare to engage the next Otoruk. Suddenly, Before you'd quite know what's happening, Emmett Hayler brushes past you, a curved wad levelled at the last Otoruk. The next instant, a blast of fire erupts from the tip of her wad and completely consumes the sinister construct. Well, that recharged a lot quicker than I expected. When the smoke clears, only a small heap of smouldering ash and several glowing iron fragments remain to mark the spot where the Otoruk last stood. Now, I'm going to assume these Otoruk are guarding the Lumberwex fortress. I mean, there is so many Otoruk around, it could just be a coincidence, but narratively speaking, coincidences don't happen. They just don't. So, yeah. Which does kind of imply that the Lumberwreck are more directly involved with Woundskin, rather than being a sort of arm's length, maybe having to be tricked a bit thing. With the Otoruk gone, you're about to make a closer examination of the gruesome scene when a sound of movement from behind startles you. You and Emmett Hayler turn in unison and find yourself confronted by nine more Otua. Behind the small legion stand three robed figures, their bulky garments drawn in tight, the waist by three lengths of rope. The robed trio, two men and a woman, step towards the Otua. Their hardened face glance gazes fixed on you and your companion. Emmett Haley flashes you a glance but says nothing. "We'd expected you long before now," says the woman, her tone firm but not entirely confrontational. "I'm afraid you stumbled upon the handiwork of some of our less reliable sort. These Otua can be unpredictable at times." The woman steps closer and addresses Emmett Haley directly. "You are here now at last," she says. "That's what matters. Had you not squandered the chance for a parley at Mixpool, all of this would certainly have never come to be." "Oh, come on, I'm doubtful that there was any chance of a parley. Or unless the parley is surrender utterly, and we do everything we want and you get nothing for it." You suddenly take note of a small round object clutched in the woman's left hand. A faint glow emanates from the hidden item, surrounding her furled fingers with a globe of pale white light. You glance at Emmett Haley and quickly note, her eyes are also fixed on the glow. All colour seems drained from your companion's face as she stares at the pale light. "The Lunawek," mutters Emmett Haley, her eyes darting sideways to meet your gaze. The road woman is about to speak when Emmett Haley boldly cuts her off, demanding to know the whereabouts of Frimbak. "Where is she?" she snarls, renewing her grip on the curved rod. "Where are you keeping him?" "He is alive. He will remain alive if you choose to see reason," says the woman, tightly glowing, posing her hand around the glowing object. "You don't wish to harm him or anyone else. We need answers to questions, answers that you can provide. You will give them to us, or we will take them from you. I suggest you opt for the former." Emmett Haley repeats her question, demanding to know where Thrimbak is. "You've already learned what little he had to tell us," says the old woman. "Although when we learned he is your brother, you knew it was likely that you would come for him. You must understand what it is you're up against. Not only us, all of us. Calamity beyond measure is coming. You're involved in something you cannot possibly comprehend. And yet, you interfere with there's no consequences for any of what you do. Allow me to dispel any such naive notion. You must, Emmett Haley." Voice trembling with rage, interrupts the woman. Woman, and again demands to know where her brother's being held. "Enough of this," snaps the world woman. "You've already had more chances than you deserve." Without warning, the woman throws up her hands. A bright white aura takes form around her and rapidly expands, enveloping you and Emmett Haley. Your companions, her face twisted into an expression of rage, screams, and stumbles forward, landing on the ground in a heap. Instinctively, you attempt to spring forward, eager to reach her side, but you find yourself barely capable of moving your legs. Suddenly, overcome by a powerful sense of fatigue, you collapse next to Emmett Haley. Lying on the ground next to Emmett Haley, you struggle against an unnatural drowsiness that threatens to rend you unconscious. Slowly, your companion turns to face you, her eyes flickering wildly, as she attempts to remain conscious long enough to say something to you. "Fight it," Sir Croakington, she grasps, trapping us in our thoughts. "Fight it! Don't look for the easy path out. Fight it!" Emmett Haley falls silent, and her eyes roll back into her head, and her body goes limp. You struggle for nearly a minute, lying helpless on your side of your unmoving companion, until darkness takes you. The last thing you see before all goes black is the three Lunruks staring down at you. Oh, they're going to do something. The dark void that consumes you is cold, lightless and silent. You drift into a peaceful sleep that seems to last an eternity, aware of only your slow, rhythmic breathing. You find yourself strangely content to remain in this state, oblivious to all, mindful of nothing. Slowly, gently, the unexpected touch of someone on Steam stirs you from your unnatural slumber. Your eyes creep open, and you're startled to find you're standing in the midst of a dim haze, the centre of a junction of four broad corridors. Suddenly mindful of the hand that stirred you from your sleep, you turn to find yourself face to face with someone familiar. Through the pale, translucent figure standing before you, seems like something out of a dream, which it kind of is, I think. How are you, dear friend? The voice issuing from the mouth of the ghostly figure is clear and unmistakable. It is that of Windle, the man you last saw quite some time ago. Since the day of the parting, he's ever lingered in your thoughts. The last apparition of your friend and companion, the apparition of your friendly companion, appears identical to your last memory of him. Windle smiles kindly and repeats his inquiry. How are you? I trust all is well. I'm not here, not in any true sense, says Windle, answering one of the questions foremost in your mind. But I do know where we are. You must not linger here. You in your thoughts, lost in the corridors of your own mind, which is where I now reside, till such time as I am forgotten. It is, of course, inevitable that such will come to pass. Not for a long, long time, old friend. Not for a long, long time. Now satisfied with Windle's cryptic revelation, you ask him if this place is the doing of the Lunruk. He pauses for a moment and then nods. Yes, I believe it must be, he says. It's your mind, but you are swiftly losing control of it. There are others here, I've seen them. They're searching for something. You must not allow them to find it. You must fight and free yourself from this prison. Suddenly, the apparitions of both of Helaine and Trailtop step out from behind Windle. The two former companions greet you warmly, for you sense they are uneasy in your presence. You attempt to put a question to the three ghostly figures, only to discover you can no longer speak. It seems you've already started to disbelieve us, says Windle, apparently aware of your failed attempt to speak. It's not surprising, as we are but ghosts among your thoughts, even less than that. Fleeting fragments of garbled flotsam, her mind slowly turning against itself. The last hopeful elements of a besieged will. Wundle's speech fades to an inaudible whisper before suddenly returning, though noticeably weaker than it was only moments ago. There's a chance to save them, you know. They are here. They are with you. They share your plight. Wundle turns and looks at both Helaine and Trailtop, nodding as his eyes meet their concerned gaze. Then, without further words, the three figures step away from you and swiftly disappear into the pale haze filling the passage. An eerie silence descends upon your strange surroundings. You become acutely aware of the deep, ragged hiss of your own breath. Okay, I am now in a dungeon. Well, Well, not in a dungeon. I'm unconscious in a forest. But I think I'm in a dungeon. And I'm in the middle of this dungeon. You're standing at the junction of four broad corridors. The immense stone passages extend out of sight, disappearing into the dim haze that fills this strange prison. As you stare at the gaping mouths of this passage while you consider your next move, you begin to feel uneasy. You're not certain you want to move from this spot. Oh, so I won't. Well, I won't for a while. Because we're getting pretty close to an hour. Because I've kept running my mouth and things. So I'll stop here, and in the next episode, we'll tackle this dungeon. And until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.